Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Now, Dr. Conor Curley is a doctor of nutrition, an award-winning nutrition researcher and a leading dietitian. And he joins me in studio now to tell the story of what led to his career path. Conor, you're very welcome.
Good morning, Claire. Thanks a million for having me.
A lot of work has gone into that introduction, hasn't it? A lot of academic work and research.
Absolutely, yeah. So I did my undergraduate in Trinity, which is 4.5 years. And then I worked for about a year. And then I did my clinical doctorate with the School of Medicine, which took another 4 years. So kind of 8.5 years. But I'm a lifelong learner.
Yeah, I mean, I make it sound in a few sentences like it was a hop, skip and a jump. And I'm sure there was blood, sweat and tears. But you do love what you do and you were very motivated by your own health journey. You were diagnosed in your teens with MS.
I was, yeah. So I remember, well, I was a keen basketball player, and just after Christmas, I had a dead leg, or what I thought was a dead leg. And it got worse and worse to the point where I couldn't really walk. And I was quite a fit young 15-year-old, and I ended up in a brain scanner at midnight on New Year's Eve in 2002. And fast forward 8 months, lots of tests, lots of scans and lots of time spent in hospital, lots of school missed. I was eventually diagnosed with MS in August 2003.
That must have been a real blow. Any kind of diagnosis that you think may limit you in any way, shape or form is difficult. But when did you begin to make the link between nutrition and our health and how this might impact you?
I suppose, like, as a young 15-year-old, and this was back in just 2002, so I'm showing my age now, but I mean, there was no Facebook. We didn't have a computer in our home, you know, so it was very difficult to access information, but there still was misinformation. So I got a lot of my my information from the local library, and unfortunately I didn't really know what to look for. But I suppose I was always keenly aware of nutrition and how important it was, but more from a sports angle, a performance angle than a health angle. And then things switched very, very quickly. And then I decided that, you know, this was really important, and I decided to put down on my CAO form, number one, nutrition and dietetics. So,
because you're here and we're talking about it, what is MS?
So MS, multiple sclerosis, is characterised as an autoimmune disorder where your body attacks the myelin, which is in your brain and spinal cord. It's an autoimmune disease, which means your own body attacks itself, the immune system attacks itself, and it's kind of characterised by systemic inflammation or inflammation over the entire body. And depending on whereabouts in the spine or brain these lesions or these attacks occur will dictate the symptoms. But the symptoms can really be anything. Fatigue being really common, I was certainly very fatigued, and also I lost complete power and function of my entire left-hand side. So I had to learn how to walk and talk again. And, you know, it can affect nearly anything and anybody at any one time. But common issues would be fatigue, balance issues, issues with muscle, mood, things like that.
And we met recently at an event, and I said, are you going to tell your story? And I meant the story of your brand. Yeah. And you said, do you mean my story with MS? And I was really thrown, because I think when we hear MS or multiple sclerosis, we think on sight we're going to see that somebody perhaps has a diagnosis, but you wouldn't know with you at all. Is that work that you've done? Are you particularly lucky? Is it a silent sort of condition?
Well, as I say, it can be silent, but for me, it certainly was not. So I had 3 major attacks within 8 months, which led to my diagnosis. As I say, I had to learn how to walk again, how to talk, how to tie my shoelaces, how to hold a knife and fork. I spent some time in a wheelchair. So I guess, like, MS, it can really affect everybody differently, and someone may not look disabled but may have severe fatigue issues or severe mood issues. And thankfully I'm relatively symptom free and medication free over 22 years after diagnosis now. So I think lifestyle is really important, and I think science has shown that, but more and more we see neurologists and physicians becoming interested in the power of lifestyle, which isn't just nutrition, which is my focus, but also exercise, stress reduction, you know, sleeping well. It's kind of everything within your daily life, your lifestyle.
And we do have a massive increase in autoimmune conditions, don't we? And many of them don't have the name MS, but people are finding that inflammation in their body is causing it to function in a different way to how it should. Do we know why that is?
Well, it probably, because we're seeing this increase, it probably suggests that the environment is important as opposed to genes, which don't change, you know, within years. It takes thousands of years for genes to change. So absolutely, we know that we're all getting more stressed. We're all getting more busy. We know that kind of lifestyle factors are deteriorating where people aren't exercising well every day. We know we're not sleeping well. We know we're more stressed, and then we know we're not eating well. So we're kind of facing into this perfect storm of, you know, low grade inflammation all the time, which is going to cause increased autoimmune diseases on a population level. And that's exactly what we're seeing.
And you touched on the way we're eating and nutrition. And we're hearing a lot about it now, ultra processed foods, the importance of whole foods. And I think sometimes people think, you know, they get it, but it's very hard to bring it into their every day. But how powerful is nutrition in how we live?
Yeah, I think it's really, really powerful. And I guess, like, it's not a quick fix. You can't eat a salad and expect to be cured. Similarly, you know, having one Big Mac is not going to cause you to have cancer or heart disease. But eating well or better, let's say, consistently is absolutely a really good idea for anybody, no matter their age or if they have a condition or not. So, I mean, there's some phenomenal research showing that nutrition can reduce risk of diseases and sometimes even reverse some damage caused by diseases. And, you know, it's something that everybody has the power to do. Whereas, you know, for example, you know, a surgery, like I can't do a surgery on myself, but I know I can eat healthy foods. And what I would say to anybody who's listening who maybe knows that their diet isn't optimal, like, it's not easy to change your diet, but just start off small and add things in as opposed to removing things. So don't worry about, you know, removing all the bad things immediately, but just maybe adding some more fruits and vegetables. And that's really a very simple place to start, and pick what you like and just add those in and, you know, build from there.
When did you begin to get interested in reproductive health and fertility and the link with nutrition there?
Yeah, so very briefly, back in 2019, I was asked to speak at the Endometriosis Association of Ireland conference. And at the time, I said yes. I was speaking at a lot of conferences. But as soon as I got off the phone, I had to Google, what is endometriosis? I'd never even heard of it. So I did my preparation, I went along and I spoke there, and then I came to realise that endometriosis is a major cause of fertility issues in females. And last year I went to an exhibition called the Future Fertility Show, and I just saw how severe of an issue fertility is in Ireland and really globally. And this has been compounded by my wife, who gave birth to our lovely son, Caelan, 8 months ago. And thankfully we didn't have any fertility issues, but we've come to learn that a lot of our friends did. And that's really not unusual. It's roughly 1 in 6 couples globally have a fertility issue. And it makes sense that nutrition would be involved in everything in life, including fertility. And in fact, the science absolutely supports that.
I remember when we were trying for our now 2 kids and it wasn't happening. I was pulling all kinds of things. I remember having my husband drink caffeine-free tea and all sorts, because this was whatever book I had at the time was telling me. Is there a diet for optimum fertility?
Well, there's no, like, kind of named single diet as such, but we know that there are some foods which promote healthy fertility in men and women, and some foods which maybe aren't so beneficial. And the foods which maybe aren't so beneficial are high in saturated fats and high in inflammatory ingredients like trans fats as well. So saturated fats would be fats that are hard at room temperature. So think of butter, think of cheese, think of the fat on a pork chop, for example, whereas olive oil is liquid at room temperature. Vice versa, we know that fats which are unsaturated, like your nuts, seeds, avocado and your olive oil, are actually beneficial for fertility in men and women. And then colourful fruits and vegetables combat something called oxidative stress, which is definitely involved in fertility issues in men and women. So that's a really good place to start for fertility.
What is oxidative stress?
So the easy way to think about it, and I always describe it to my patients, is, you know, if you have an apple and you take a bite of the apple, after a few minutes, the apple starts to go brown. That's the oxygen damaging the apple. And the same thing happens inside the human body. There's only 2 ways to stop this damage. By the way, oxidative stress is completely natural and normal, but excess is bad. And this is what happens now. And things which can increase oxidative stress are pollution, stress, cigarette smoking, fast food, burnt food, etc., etc. All the things we're exposed to a lot. So oxidative distress has been linked to lots of different things, from MS to fertility to cardiovascular disease to cancers and so on. So we can combat it, number one, by not breathing oxygen, which isn't really practical. But number two is consuming a diet rich in antioxidants, which will be your colourful fruits and vegetables, your nuts and seeds. But the superstars of antioxidants are herbs and spices.
Wow. And it's just adding things in. That's what I always think. More colour on the plate, more herbs and spices in your cooking. How many things can you get on the one plate?
Exactly.
Rather than that focus on what are you taking out? What can you not have?
And people tend to think of eating healthy means removing the foods we love, which are maybe high in fat and sugar and salt. And when if you actually add in the foods that you like that are really healthy, that's probably going to be more sustainable and just as healthy. There's some fascinating research showing that a really unhealthy meal can actually paralyze your arteries within hours. But if you have that exact same unhealthy meal with, for example, a portion of blueberries or a teaspoon of herbs and spices, your arteries don't really get affected at all. Now, I'm not advising people to run out to their nearest chipper and have a portion of blueberries with it every day, but it just shows the power of including, you know, a small amount of really healthy foods is really, really powerful.
And do you find, as an expert in nutrition working in this area, when you and your wife go to a friend's house for dinner, they're like, oh, don't look in my cupboards and don't look in my fridge. And yet that's not how normal people live. We're allowed to have certain amounts of these foods.
Absolutely. So like some people do definitely think that I'm the food police, and I'm certainly not. definitely not. And you know, I'm very practical. I talk about, you know, not about perfection, because we don't even know what dietary perfection is, but it's about like kind of progress and, you know, just doing a little bit better than the average person who may not be doing so well. So like, have I had a biscuit in the past? Absolutely. And, you know, is someone a bad person or a really unhealthy person for having someone unhealthy? Not at all.
Yeah. And I think people can get kind of intimidated by that, or some of the environmental factors, like you said, like pollution, things we can't control. They think, oh, sure, I may as well throw my whole hat at it. But I think the example you gave of a small amount of blueberries alongside an unhealthy meal can make a big difference. It's quite empowering that we can make small changes that can make a big difference. Tell me a bit about setting up your company, Phytofix, because supplements can cause controversy, can't they? And did you in any way have any sort of hesitation? Because I assume you're food first. You don't want to say, here's a magic pill that's going to solve everything. What was your thought process in all of that?
Absolutely. So I guess, you know, after I completed my clinical doctorate with the School of Medicine at UCD, I then got headhunted for a role in Washington. And then I got funded to go to Australia to present my research over there. And while over there, I kind of had my epiphany moment. Let's come back to Ireland and see if we can do something with this research. And the area we were initially interested in was cardiovascular disease, because I won a lot of awards for my research on blood pressure, which is a really important risk factor. So we were about to do a clinical trial, and then COVID-19 hit and my whole world collapsed, because I had no money, I had no job, I had no security, nobody was hiring. I'm sure everyone can remember.
You had all these qualifications.
And nothing to show for it. So we pivoted from cardiovascular focus towards an immune focus, because everybody was interested in immunity. But my real passion was helping people with, you know, health issues. So what we did next was we looked at some of the research which had been done, and we looked at some research which had been done in MS initially. And they saw that some nutrition compounds could actually get into the brain and have anti-inflammatory effects in people with MS and reduce the size of their lesions. And this was just remarkable. And I was thinking, my God, like, I want to take this. So I started looking into it, and then other people started contacting me and taking it. Now, that product's called NeuroFix. It's based on amazing research, and it's specifically to help the nervous system, to help with inflammation, and also to help with fatigue. We also then looked at some research in endometriosis, and similarly saw some nutrition compounds that had been studied and had some amazing effects. So then we come up with a product called Endohormone Fix, which again had been shown to be beneficial for hormone metabolism, for inflammation, and for oxidative stress, which we spoke about. And I guess it does come back to nutrition, but some of these components which had actually been studied in really good studies in humans, not in animals or in lab tests, are not really found in the diet. I'm talking about things like Indian frankincense. I'm talking about bromelain, which actually comes from pineapple, but you'd have to eat the equivalent of 21 pineapples to get the therapeutic dose. I'm talking about things like andrographolide, which comes from andrographis, which is a plant found in a herbal plant found in Sri Lanka. So again, many people won't have heard of these and certainly won't be in their diet, but they've already got scientifically documented benefits for specific conditions like endometriosis and MS.
And I said supplements can be controversial, but this is the important part. This is based on research, and that's where you need to be careful. You can't just pick up something off a supermarket shelf and think that's going to be your fix. There should be supplement certification, and you need to really make sure that you research what you're taking and what evidence base is behind that.
Absolutely. You know, like, supplements weren't so common, let's say 10 or 20 years ago, but there's a huge marketing drive on, and now it's more common for someone to take supplements than not take supplements in the Western world. But a lot of people are taking supplements which probably have little or no benefit and definitely have little or no science. So if you are interested, I would recommend asking for the evidence. If you're telling me this is good for hormonal health, what is the evidence? Like, show me the evidence and ask for that evidence. Do not be afraid of that.
And I love that you're working so much in the area of women's health, because we've been told for so long that women can't be studied in a clinical trial because of our hormone fluctuation, because of pregnancy risk, that if you were a part of a clinical trial and you became pregnant, there could be damage. But you're booking that trend too, because you are researching these issues and helping make a difference.
Yeah, so at the minute, I'm not involved directly in clinical research myself, but in the past, I certainly was. And we always made sure to include men and women, which is really important because women are 50% of the population, right? So if we don't know if it works in women, then it becomes a little bit less useful. So absolutely. What you said is true. Like, we do have to have a little bit more consciousness about, you know, pregnancy risk in a lady, and also how it might how the lady's cycle may affect the results of the study. So it makes it a little bit more complicated. But science is complicated, and we need to, as scientists, do better and say, look, we are consciously going to include at least 50% women in the study. If it's a general condition, and if it's a female condition, then it's going to be 100% female, and just take account of all these things like hormonal cycles and pregnancy and so on.
Well, I hope this comes across the right way, but I'm really proud of everything that, when I think back to 15-year-old Connor getting that diagnosis and everything that that has led to. Do you ever take stock and take that on?
I mean, life is busy, but, you know, recently I was just contacted a girl from my hometown, Dundalk, who's just turned 16, and she's just been diagnosed. And she was referred to me by a local physio who said, look, there's this guy, he had MS, he was diagnosed at 15 and he would be worth talking to. And I know that I've already just lifted her hopes and her spirit and helped her journey. And that's what wakes me up in the morning.
Yeah, that's magic. Connor, where can people find out more?
Yeah, so just Google my name. It's an unusual, so Connor and then Curly. It's a Dundalk surname, so K-E-R-L-E-Y. I'm here to help.
To find out more, you can go to Connor's Instagram page. He's at Dr_ConnorCurley. Connor, thank you very much again for coming on.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk.